Anansi discovered other gods in this new world, as many and as numerous as the ones he had left behind. Some of them adopted his people as their own. Gods are known for their jealousy, but like those he followed across the sea, Anansi's only concern became survival. These gods protected their own people as best as they could, and more importantly, they carried other stories. Ancient, important stories that they shared with Anansi. Stories that became partly Anansi's as the people who were taken to this place mingled with the ones who had always been there. Hello again, I am History, and this is part 3 of our story. History is better understood chronologically, and I would recommend that you start at the beginning. When we last visited this tragedy, for all history, particularly the history of Anansi's people, is tragedy, we learned that the witch Asa was dead. This was likely a surprise to some, but to those who followed the journey of Kamau, this event is at the genesis of his mythology. But Asa is not just a foil that brought the monster to the island. She was much more than that, important in her own right, even if her beauty, and more relevantly, the perversions of her captors, cut her life short. Criminally, very little is written about Asa, even among those scholars who chronicled the life of the infamous Obaifo and the things he did after she was gone. We are fortunate, however, because Asa wrote her own history. This pamphlet can be procured with some effort from your local library, or any gathering of historians worth their salt. It is a seminal source for any serious scholarship into the forgotten stories. There is no voice better suited to tell her story than Asa herself, and so, with that admission, I will be reading directly from the surviving document authored by the witch herself that details the events leading up to her death. Asa also had a very unique gift that makes her writing especially interesting, as you will see shortly. What follows is Asa's story, carefully translated from her native tongue, but otherwise without omission or any other kind of editorial input. I am Asa. I am the protector of the Rona people. My mother was the protector before me, and her mother before her. It has always been that way. The men protect us from other men with spears and knives. The women protect the village from other things, the shadows and the things that the shadows hold. But usually, we protect the village from itself. The women who protect are able to do more. To do more is to do more than the other men and women. My mother could talk to the animals of the forest like they were her children. Her mother could read what would happen by looking at the sky. I can also do more. I can see what will happen next. Not as clearly as reading the sky, but I could see as far as I was supposed to, and that has helped my tribe survive. But no ability is perfect, and I did not see the men coming to steal us away. Maybe it was because what they were doing was so unnatural that the gods did not have names for it. Or maybe it was because it was our destiny to come to this place. A place where I am sure that the world will end. Of all the lives I could have lived, I did not have a bad one. I loved a good man, because no matter what he was before me or what he will be after I am gone, he was a man. He was strong, but I did not need his strength. He was kind, but if he had been unkind, I would not have loved him. He was good in a way only someone who was always fighting against the bad could be. If the tribe disapproved of him and me, they never said and we never noticed. He was not there when they came to take us, and those who were there were not enough to stop them. Everyone fought. The men, the women, even the children and the animals. Who would not fight to stop the world from ending? In the end, it was like we were not fighting against men, but pieces of an awful machine. That was the first time I saw it. The future of the Rona people stretched out before me. It was no longer a single story. It had become many splinters, like pieces of broken glass. My own story was among them, but I could not yet find it. I knew Kamau had felt them take me, just like I had felt him running desperately through the night to get to us. I cried, not because I was afraid, but because I knew he would be too late. I cried at his frustration, his pain, and his anger. I cried for what he would do. I had seen guns before, but never as many as the men that took us. They did not talk to us. They put iron around our necks and linked us together. We walked for several days, stopping only to sleep. It was strange to see my entire world, everyone I had known, sister, brother, auntie, uncle, all heading towards an unknown future. Not unknown to me, perhaps, because I saw the endless rows of sugarcane in the fields of cotton. I already felt the pain in my back from cutting cane and picking cotton until I was dead. I could not tell anyone what I saw, partly because our captors would not let us talk, and partly because I did not want to. Let them believe that all those who had been taken before were eaten by cannibals or murdered by demons. I could not tell them that we were all marching to hell. When we reached the water, I knew that this was the last time the Rona would ever be shoulder to shoulder again. When I cried that time, it was not because they shaved my head or made me strip naked. It was because we were scattered among the waiting ships and the breaking finally happened. It was because I could not see how the pieces would ever fit together again. I had expected the ship, but I did not expect the smell, the heat, or the death. I don't know what happened to the men, but the women had to fight against more than just the obvious. The men with ivory skin, it would have been easier to think of them as demons. These men were not deterred by the heat, the smell, or the death. They had their way with many of us, but some of us realized that whatever they planned to do was not over yet, and they could not afford to kill us all. Like others, I chose the whip to whatever else they had in mind. There were a few who saw the faces of their tribe's people in the water below, and they jumped from the ship, shouting curses at the men with ivory skin. After enough of us had jumped, they put up netting around the ship to keep this from happening again. After a few days, some of the women banded together. We became each other's strength and kept watch for the men who crept down in the middle of the night to have their way with us. One of us could be made to submit at knife point, but those who swore to die rather than give up the one thing that still belonged to us, we fought and shouted and clawed and bit like the animals they thought we were. There were many groups like this, born out of a sisterhood that formed in the hulls of the ship. When we reached land, it was like losing our tribes all over again. The sisters who we had fought alongside and slept next to for so many nights were once again torn from us, and I could tell from the way that the eyes of the men in the crowd lingered over our bodies that we would need each other more than ever in this new place. I am Asa, but they called me Liza. I understood this because when the fat man with the pink face and tight clothes pulled me to the middle of the wooden platform, he pointed the big stick towards me and said, "Liza," several times. I was then put in a cart along with about 10 others. And then another man, this one lean with sunken eyes, who the fat man had called Jonathan. This man took us on the last leg of our trip. All the while I could feel Kamau, moving toward me but never getting closer. That feeling went away when I was put in Jonathan's cart. The loss of Kamau, along with my sisters from the trip, left me lonely. This place was strange, and while most of the people looked like me, with black skin and dark eyes, the ones with ivory skin were clearly in charge. There was one thing that was familiar, however. Nobody else but a witch would have noticed. It was the feeling of the trickster. The spirit of the spider god was all around me. I do not know how Ba'anansi came to be in this place. And he felt smaller than he did when we made sacrifices to him at the place outside our village. But I knew him like an old friend. And I whispered a prayer. Not for deliverance, because I doubted he could do that. Not in this place. But just to thank you for following us. We had not lost everything after all. We did not go to the big house immediately. even though I saw it at the top of the hill, like a terrible castle. First, we went to the group of wooden huts that were scattered around, the place where the people who look like me live. And as soon as I stepped off the cart, on the red dirt of what they called the slave village, I saw my own future, clear and set apart from the others of my tribe. I saw the ivory-skinned man with red-veined eyes and the smell of drink on his breath. I knew what he wanted, and I saw what he did when I would not give it to him. But that is not why I am writing this, on pieces of tree bark hidden in the corner of this hut. There are others to speak of the wickedness of this place. I hope that many people will read this and remember Asa. Remember that she kept one thing for herself, even though they took her life. But this last piece, I must write to my Kamau. Because as clear as I can see that I will not long live in this place, cleaning shit out of pots for these monsters, I know that you, Kamau, are coming, even if I can no longer feel you like I once could. Let the monster free, Kamau. You have held it back for so long. These people here, they may not be our people, but they are our people. Like the women fighting off the sailors in the hull of the ship, you too must make a new tribe. We can never go back, because we do not know the way, not home, or to our real brothers and sisters. But those who have taken the trip are bounded by something just as strong as blood. They will need the monster if they are to survive. I know you will find me, but it will be too late. I know you will be angry. Let the monster loose, Kamau, but turn it towards those who rape, beat, and lock us up for sport. Even the Obaifo must one day die, and when that day comes, I will be waiting for you. Until then, let the monster free. We owe the preservation of this remarkable and emotional record to the very same John Black, whose autobiography tells us that he found the pieces of bark, inked in blood, laying next to Asa's body. Black, who would later become an academic of sorts, could not yet read, but something about the record caused him to keep it safe for years until the eventual value was recognized. There is obviously nothing else that anyone could add to this story, so for now, we pause and remember Asa and all the women like her.